This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, December the 5th, 2008.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You know, the market folded for the week with wheat finishing under $5, corn below $3, and $8 beans disappearing into the ether. Can they find a bottom soon or not? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Ray Jenkins from Cargill in Eddyville, Iowa. Our panelists today are Mike Zuzlo with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain in Windsor, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of WILL Public Radio for the farming world from the University of Illinois. Let's open our discussion with this question. Mike Zuzlo, can you be bearish $3 corn and under?
No, not if the equity markets show a bottom here, and especially next week. I was happy with the way the jobs report was so negative, but the equity markets bounced, led by the banks on Friday, Todd. And I think that if we can get a sell signal, a good, strong sell signal in both bonds and the dollar, we should carve out a low between now and when Obama gets inaugurated.
Mike Zuzlo is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Matt Bennett is with Bennett Grain out of Windsor, Illinois.
I would agree with what Mike has to say. I've been looking for quite a while, hoping to find a reason to get bullish corn. It's pretty tough whenever crude's dropping like a bomb and dollar's stays fairly strong in the last few weeks. But you know, if we get a sell signal on the dollar, I agree with Mike. I feel like we should get some sort of a bounce at some point. We have to do something to get our export market going. I think if the dollar would weaken a little bit, maybe we can get some export interest, started.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities?
Well, short term, we're probably going to struggle for a little while until the events unfold like they mentioned. The key is probably this coming week, from the point that we're going through commodity fund redemption. We saw some commodity funds, in fact, shut down. They had to liquidate. And the market absorbed that here this past week. The key is probably the 290 level in the December futures. But the problem we got faced in front of us is once these goes off the board down here, we could have the March roll down. So it's going to be a challenge to get above $3 and stay there. If we can do that, maybe we can see some positive factors come into the marketplace.
Oh, I knew I was going to find a Christmas Grinch among the three of you somewhere, and there he is. So here's the way the numbers settled for the week. We'll try to keep a smile on our face, but this is some bad news across the board. December corn this week had a high of $3.52 the low. 290, a settlement price 56 cents lower from last Friday at 293.5 for the December contract. Next year's December corn at 349.25, down 62.25. We'll go ahead and fill out the rest of the coarse grains. December oats, $1.84.5, 17 lower. Wheat futures, 543 on the Dease for the high. The low at 455 and a settlement price there at 457.75, down 84.75. July wheat at 501.5, down 86.25. I'm going to stay with the wheat for just a second. We'll get back to the corn. Mike Zuzlo, you like to follow the wheat. Convergence factors. Has the Chicago Board of Trade, CFTC, come to enough conclusion in the changes that they made this week to make convergence actually happen properly in the soft red winter wheat?
I think they're going to be a lot closer in the soft red, Todd, but the hard red, we still have to wonder about it. You know, I don't know whether the Kansas City will converge as well, you know, because they just haven't done as much with the Kansas City contract. But it looks like the soft red is going to be aided in converging more. I think the only disappointing part about that specification is they continue to leave out Toledo. And in Ohio and eastern Indiana, there are a lot of farmers that grow a lot of soft red wheat that would take small vessels, you know, to Toledo, or take trucks to Toledo that would be loaded out on small vessels. But they're punishing those producers and asking them to go to the river instead, it seems to me. So I'm still watching that side of the equation.
I'll let you stay with me for just a second, then we'll move on to corn. So let's make that transfer, Mike, just a bit. Tell me about wheat in the world market and how it's being used and how much it's being used as feed wheat replacing corn at this point.
Well, I think it's still our leader, you know, and that shows up in the feed wheat. You know, one of the big reasons why we're down about 32% year-to-date on corn export commitments is because the wheat is robbing us in the corn market of feed supplies, and demand is going after that, especially in the poultry market. We also are, you know, going to see some acreage reduction, and we're going to find that out in the next 30 to 45 days. Those acreage reductions, both soft and hard red, could be pretty substantial. And I think the other thing goes back to the price. At the U.S., you know, because U.S. wheat is the last thing purchased, we're the, you know, demand side of last resort, both politically and price-wise. That's probably the biggest reason why we are the wheat is a leader to the corn. And I think it goes back to why China came in and bought wheat this week, at least one cargo. It seems to us that maybe the price is getting closer and closer to fair value now in the trade.
Would you agree, Kurt, wheat at fair value at this point? And does that give you some impetus for the upside marketplace?
Well, right now when you price our wheat in the world market, we're still relatively not competitive at the moment, so we're working through that issue. But two, on the world wheat demand, we're starting to see a little tighter situation in the Black Sea. Their inventory is running down, so we're going to be in a position here where we maybe can capture some of this world market. But the thing that Mike hit on is this acreage is down big. Just about everybody we visit with in the east end here is going to be down soft red winter wheat, but also too out west. You take Nebraska and northern Kansas, they were extremely wet, and the wheat did not get in out there. But, you know, it's going to take time, like Mike said, until after the first year before the trade really probably bites on that.
Matt, you're closer to an area that grows a bit more wheat. Are the acres down? And for what reasons would that have been the case in the fall? Because, of course, it should have been in the ground by now a long time.
Well, I think definitely, you know, there are areas out west that Kurt alludes to where we had, you know, it was wet. Also, a lot of late harvesting going on, and anywhere south of where I'm at, you know, guys just didn't have the opportunity to get the time to get it in. There's still corn out south of us, not a lot, but you know, there's a lot of guys that have struggled with not only precipitation, but you know, where they were wanting to put their wheat is where they still had crop on the field, and they couldn't get it out of the field because it was too wet to harvest it. So, you know, I think that there's way less acreage of wheat as opposed to what it is usually. I think, you know, it's going to provide an interesting dilemma because of, you know, a lot of guys were in a wheat-beans rotation, kind of looking at that. You know, a lot of guys that already have wheat out, though, they've made the claim that whenever they put the wheat in the ground, they had a locked-in deficit. So maybe some of these guys ought to be happy that they didn't get wheat in the ground.
We have a couple of folks on the program this week that are in the grain chain. Matt Bennett, of course, an elevator operator in Windsor, Illinois. And then we'll talk with Ray Jenkins of Cargill a bit later. We'll ask him this question as well. But how are you faring as an elevator person at this point? How's the system holding up?
I can tell you that it's nice not to have gigantic margin calls every day, but it's been pretty tough. You know, you got guys come in, you know, and they want to get answers. When's this thing going to turn around? When's this thing going to bounce? And it's pretty tough to give them anything positive right now with the way that the outside markets are performing. About everything that you hear is a negative factor. I can tell you we're not buying much right now. You know, guys are sitting. They're not doing much of anything. I think everybody's kind of been shell-shocked at what's happened. I think morale's pretty low, and, you know, the guys just aren't doing much.
Well, they're not doing much, but should they be doing much, in your opinion?
Well, you know, I've been saying that guys that had some sales on that, you know, that felt like they had a good crop, if they averaged out the price, you know, having the kind of crop that they did, you know, maybe it wouldn't be such a bad idea to go ahead and sell stuff. I've been saying that for quite a while. You know, and I'm always fairly bullish. You know that. But, you know, I've been saying, why not sell some? And then if you think that it's going to bounce, let's go in there and buy some cheap calls. Let's do something to give yourself some sort of a chance at some recuperation. But go ahead and get out of it for now so you're not worried about it, and then maybe take some re-ownership.
The producer not selling here has created an extremely tight basis. We've got positive basis at Decatur now that people didn't think would not happen. And this could be a problem down the road as we start to see this stuff shake loose. But in the meantime, this gives us an opportunity to go ahead and move the cash, maybe transfer ownership to paper if you're bullish. That way you've freed up some funds to pay some of these bills up front here.
I think Kurt has a huge point about the basis. You know, we've been running puts for several months now and bought puts in Dece and now in March, and we're really looking hard. You know, we've rolled them down a couple, three times. We're looking hard at lifting those. Todd, we're at a point right now with $40 crude oil. We're really exploring the idea of getting some July bean, corn, and wheat calls bought in anticipation of a bounce, you know, between now and early March to pre-buy, you know, and that's a spec trade, but pre-buy our sales that we anticipate making at higher levels because we feel like $40 crude is kind of a gift right now.
Let's switch topics just a bit before we hit the beans and maybe a bit on the livestock. But I do want to talk about fertilizer and input costs. A lot of producers have not done anything on this at this point, and there's probably some real problems, I would think, especially in the fertilizer industry. What do you hear? What's going to happen? How do producers deal with the uncertainty in the fertilizer industry and the creditworthiness of their provider of those products? What are you hearing in the marketplace?
Well, you know, it's a loaded question, definitely. Mike and I talked a little bit earlier about not being able to make 09 sales and how hard it was to make 09 sales. And what I've recommended to my clients all along is, you know, if you can't lock in the sale aspect of it, or if you're not willing to do something for price protection, certainly don't lock in the input side of it. Because, you know, there's so much uncertainty right now. There's so much volatility throughout the entire ag sector. You know, I didn't want to go out and spend $1,200 on anhydrous. As far as fertilizer goes, fertilizer prices, most people will agree potash price won't come down. But that price probably is going to end up coming down. And I think that what you're going to see is people are going to be forced into probably dipping their price. I don't know if they'll be able to chew through all of the inventory they have, but I think they're going to have a hard time moving any inventory if they don't end up dropping their prices, especially with the price of corn under $3 right now.
It reminds me of a giant poker game. Everybody's watching everybody and who's bluffing and who's going to fold first. But my recommendation is I've had conversation with some higher-ups in the fertilized business, and what I was told is they don't want to lose the producer as a customer.
I think it's very interesting if you run a crop calculator about every other day and you use 190 corn and 55 bushel beans and you plug in a 200-acre cash rent and you take your fertilizer down to 10 bucks an acre on beans, your break-evens are 465 on corn and 926 on beans. Beans aren't buying acres right now, and that's what's so shocking to me.
Which do you think was worse at this point? Which economy was suffering worse at this point? Was it the elevator economy when we were pushing their margins up against those really high prices? And maybe you can stay out of this one because you were in the midst of that. Or is it the fertilizer dealer on the downside of this price? And the elevators seem to have survived it. Can the fertilizer dealers do the same thing?
Well, it's going to be a little tough this year. It's a little two different things. The elevator had some cash grain to back those hedges up, even though the basis was the problem there. Whereas now the fertilized guys, they've booked that and bought that, and that's not a hedge. So he's got to try to move that at the highest possible level he can to avoid tremendous losses.
Yeah, that mark to market is what the elevator guys had going for them. If they had good accountants and good banks, they could get together and say, okay, mark to market, we've got our cash long against our short hedge. This will work out. It's a time specific problem. The fertilizer guys don't have that. They've got the solid inventory in-house, and it's eating them up right now.
I had one other question, and this one came from a farmer, wanted to know if I thought, and I don't make these decisions or make comments on them, but I'll ask you guys, if the price of seed corn was going to have to drop in the process too.
I think if you stop and look at that situation, it's going to be tough for them to drop the price right now. As if, you know, a lot of guys have already bought their seed. There's going to be tremendous outcry if there's not something done for the guys that have already locked in their seed. You have seen one of the major companies come in and give a higher discount for December pay. I think there's going to be things that go on, but as far as altogether price drop, I think that's not going to happen right now.
And very quickly, tell me about the bean market. 1 minute left, we'll go across the board.
Well, beans been trying to hang in there fundamentally stronger than the rest of the commodity. Sales been good to Asia, but we're going to have to start focusing on the southern hemisphere as we move into January.
I think, you know, you look at the weather and we have potential problems, and I think that might be the one thing that might give us a chance of keeping it, you know, at least steady.
Yeah, they've discounted the weather and gone straight to the crude oil pits in our view.
All right, we'll be back in just 2 minutes when we'll talk with Ray Jenkins. He's with Cargill at their Eddyville, Iowa plant. This is Commodity Week.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. With December 1st came the start of the meteorological winter, which is December through February, and winter weather it was. Temperatures this week averaged 6 to 7 degrees below normal across Illinois, with no immediate prospects for a warm-up. Many locations in the state received their first significant snowfall of the season with the storm that began late last Saturday and continued into Monday. Snowfall by early Sunday morning was largely across central Illinois, with amounts mostly in the 1 to 3 inch range. However, parts of McLean County received more than 4 inches by that time. During the day on Sunday, the snow moved into northern Illinois, laying down a blanket of 3 to 5 inches of snow in general, with a few locations getting up to 6 inches. By Monday, roads were treacherous as winds whipped around the snow that had fallen the previous 24 hours. On Wednesday, yet another cold front moved through Illinois, preceded by some rain in the south and followed by mostly light snow north and central. The winter weather pattern we have been locked into will continue through next week. The medium-range forecast models have been persistent in bringing another storm through the southern Midwest in the Monday-Tuesday time frame, followed by another surge of cold air. After a few days of clear but cold weather, another storm system could be affecting Illinois by next weekend. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the December 5th edition of Commodity Week. Our panelists today in studio are Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain from Windsor, Illinois, and Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Some numbers we didn't get to in the first half of the program include these for the soybeans. January for the week had a high of $8.82¾. A low this week at $7.76¼, and the settlement price at $7.83½, finished 99¢ lower from the last Friday close. And next year's November beans at $8.02¢ were down $1.03¢. Live cattle over at the Mercantile Exchange side of the CME Group. December futures, 86.45 on the high, the low at 80.65, settled 81.55, down 5.82¢. The Jans at 86.65, down 5.05. December lean hogs, 59.15 for the high, the low at 56.95. Their settlement price at 57.45, down 2.05. Our guest in this edition of Commodity Week is from Cargill's plant in Eddyville, Iowa. Please welcome Ray Jenkins. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Tell me, Ray, how have you managed to get the plant through the very high highs and now what appears to be pretty low lows?
Well, it's certainly been a year full of challenges. Our facility came within about 8 or 10 inches of being lost in the floods in June. I remember staying open one weekend because we were concerned about losing the Des Moines River Bridge, and we dumped about 1,300 trucks one weekend. I think we offered a $7 spot bid for whatever people wanted to haul, And now we're, if you can believe it, we're still in harvest here. We're going to dump about 400,000 bushels of corn today, and a third of that's coming right out of the field.
Ray, before the rally started, there was a lot of speculation or talk that a lot of plants would go broke if corn go to 350, then 450, then 5, then 6, and 7. But when we look at the news now, I mean, margins were tight. But how did a lot of these plants survive with the big rally?
Well, I think now it's going to come out that ethanol plants, let's classify pretty much the dry mill plants in one group here, are probably not faring all that well for a couple of reasons here. And one is that we tend to focus a lot of the ag media efforts on what's happening on a spot crush margin in ethanol. And the fact of the matter is that nobody kind of comes clean to the table here. Everybody's got some sort of a corn ownership position on, and we've seen such radical changes in the value of ethanol versus RBOB gasoline that there's some real issues there for folks in how their contracts were structured as well.
Things like what?
Well, back in the spring, ethanol was trading for 60 to 70 cents under RBOB gasoline futures. And everybody believed that we were going to just continue pumping out ethanol. And so people locked in basis contracts, say, at 25 under RBOB gasoline. And now ethanol's trading at 60 to 70 cents above RBOB. Nobody expected RBOB to crash like this. So some people are out as much as $1.50 to $2 per bushel of corn processed on that spread. It's almost like the 1996 hedge-to-arrive debacle, but it's in ethanol.
Ray, whenever you look at the very things you're talking about, most producers are asking us, what's this mean for the viability of the ethanol business? You know, how are these guys going to be able to perform in this type of market? And, you know, what are we going to be able to burn through 3 billion bushels or even 4 like some people were talking?
Well, we're going to start getting a hint next week of the opinion of the government on that, but certainly the 4 billion number is definitely too high. We've got a lot of capacity that's idled, some of it because of businesses in bankruptcy, some that I think are trying to run at lower rates to maximize efficiency instead of production actually here right now. I think there's definitely a loss of confidence going forward. I'm hearing that land values in areas where some of these plants are located has dropped $500 to $1,000 simply in the last week.
Idled is scary enough. Will they be shuttered?
Some may, yes. I think there will be plants that potentially sit idle for some time here.
So big plants or smaller plants? Which are more likely to stay down?
Well, there's a big group of small plants that are in, say, Minnesota and the Dakotas. And with their financial structure, if they've done a good job over the years of paying off debt, I think they're in pretty good position. But some of the smaller plants that have been built recently that have now run into some kind of difficulty, I think those are the ones that there could be stranded assets here for some time.
Ray, looking at more of the detail on the crush and what was locked in, it kind of sounds like a variable rate mortgage where they get notched up, but there's also a time sensitivity to it. In other words, at some point, some of these locked basis and crush margins, negative crush margins were locked in. They will go by the wayside, and then you're back to the spot market, yes or no, and do you have any idea when that end would be?
I think it'll carry on for another 3 to 6 months. The folks that would appear to be in the best shape in the industry are actually plants that were late to be constructed and are just in the process of coming online because I think they have very limited exposure to both the very high corn cost and also these ethanol contracts.
Ray, on your marketing as far as buying grain, do you have any creative hedging strategy you use, or just straight futures or options?
In our office here in Eddyville, we focus on the cash origination side. and our Minneapolis group handles pretty much the future side of it for our business. Of course, we're a large wet mill with a lot of different variety of customers and how they manage risk. So out here in the country, we're focused on keeping truck lines short.
Ray, whenever you look at the just the wild change that we've had both in corn and soybean values, you know, and some of these guys that aren't done harvesting yet, obviously some of them, I'm sure, don't have the crop contracted as they're bringing it in. What do you think it's going to do in your area as far as their implications for next year with acreage?
Well, that's the big question, and as we're talking to people, we're hearing the same things that you folks expressed, you know, about cost of production being inadequate here on the price side to cover those elements here. I think a lot of people are going to be learning about the new government program called ACRE and the implications there for some risk management side there. But right now, there's just a lot of talk about more beans in the countryside and how to hold expenses down versus looking for home runs on growing a lot of corn.
Ray, can you give us a quick overview of where Eddyville is in Iowa? And you said you were still harvesting. That's kind of an interesting thought still. And then what your plant functions might be.
We're about 75 miles southeast of Des Moines, right near the banks of the Des Moines River. So we're right in the south central, southeast crop district down here. State of Iowa was about 95% harvested last Monday. We traditionally do have some late harvest down here in far south central Iowa, but we were heavily affected by the late planting and the flooding down here. And this crop that's being harvested right now, a lot of it was planted in the June 10 to 20 time period.
And what does your plant do?
We are primarily a high fructose corn syrup producer. We also have fermentation processes for citric acid and across-the-fence customers that produce lysine and other products.
We appreciate you being with us for the day.
Thank you.
Thanks much. That's Ray Jenkins. He's with Cargill at their Eddyville, Iowa plant. Time for a quick look at what a final word might be from our in-studio panelists. They include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
We feel this coming week's going to be an important week to watch whether the market can hold or not.
I'm Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain in Windsor, Illinois.
I would just say everyone should hang in there and count their blessings because it's been a pretty good year regardless of what's happened lately.
And Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana.
We see 09 as a year where you're going to be needing to stay engaged in the market but not consumed by it. So team up with the marketing person who fits your personality and risk parameters and enjoy the season.
Our thanks to our guest, Ray Jenkins from the Cargill plant in Eddyville, Iowa, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain in Windsor, Illinois, and Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, for joining us on this December the 5th edition of Commodity Week. A couple things to keep in mind. You can always hear Commodity Week anytime you'd like right there on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Have a great week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.